You're listening to Messenger Insight, a news and information program brought to you by the Baptist Messenger and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Messenger Insight. I'm Brian Hobbs, and my co-host, Bob Nye, is joining me in this edition. Bob is managing editor of the Messenger. Thank you for being with us here, Bob.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks, Brian.
I'm particularly excited about our special guest today. He's the most popular columnist with the Baptist Messenger. He's written 700 and counting columns. He is president of All Star Ministries in Tulsa, Oklahoma. His name is Walker Moore. And Walker, welcome to Messenger Insight.
Well, thank you for having me today. I'm looking forward to being with you guys.
Your columns cover the gamut. You write about life, parenting, and Christian virtues and the Bible. And the title of your new book, though, is Rite of Passage Parenting, Four Essential Experiences to Equip Your Kids for Life. And I was hoping we could talk why you chose that title and what you mean by that and some of the causes that made you want to write the book.
Well, when I started youth ministry, I began to discover we had a problem. And one of the problem was that there young people could not transition to adult lifestyle. In fact, they were freshmen, you know, they were acting as adolescents. By the time they were a senior in high school, they were still acting like adolescents. And when they were in college, they're still acting like adolescents. When they got married, they still act like adolescents. And somewhere I begin to realize that this generation is missing a rite of passage to close down their childhood, to move them to responsible, self-reliant, becoming a capable adult.
And you talk in the book about Jesus at the age of 12 visiting the temple and that experience. You talk about understanding that and translating that into parenting principles. It was a powerful book, a unique book. You even mentioned this word teenager is a modern construct or invention.
Yeah, it was coined in 1941, April edition of Popular Science magazine. Before that, the word teenager did not exist in the English language. And all of a sudden, we saw this new word that popped up, and then it wasn't in the title of a book till 1948. So the whole concept of teenager has been a recent invention in our culture. Even when I was growing up, we were called the intermediate department or the Baptist Young People Union. There was no such thing as teenagers, even when I was a young teenager.
Walker, in your book, you talk about helping children move into adulthood. And part of that process is, especially in Chapter 6, you talk about giving them significant tasks to help them move along that journey, I guess, really is what it is. And I think in there you talk about a significant task, and you call it, you define it as a special assignment that demonstrates an individual's worth to the people that he considers important. And that really is important to help a child move from being really a child to an adult, isn't it?
Yes. What has happened is when we switch from being an agricultural society to an industrial society, we've lost the concept of significant task. Mm-hmm. You watch the TV show The Waltons, John Boy planted corn, and that was his significant task. A significant task is defined two ways. It gives you self-value and worth within the society. Also, if you don't do it, a large number of people will suffer. So if John Boy didn't plant the corn, his family would starve. That was significant that he had. He had to do that. Every child had a significant task. When we moved to an industrial society, also we moved into the burbs, and no child no longer has a significant task. In fact, they think taking out the trash, making their bed is the most significant thing in the world, and it's not.
What would you consider a significant task then to a 10-year-old?
Well, I believe, first of all, that by 8 years of age, I'll start doing their own laundry. Okay. Every child ought to take on his own task of doing his own laundry and doing that. Then you move him to, for instance, our oldest son, Jeremiah. When he was 9 years old, he took on paying a bill in the house, and he paid the electrical bill. So every time the electrical bill came in, we had a little basket with his name on it. We put the bill in there, and I taught him how to fill out the electrical information and how to do the checkbook and how to put it in there and to do subtraction to, you know, balance out the checkbook. And on Friday night at our family meeting, he would present me the electrical bill to sign. And then he had to put it into the envelope and put it into the mailbox to, you know, so what do you do at home? I take care of the electrical bill. You know, he was a little chest would swell up. Mm-hmm. And it's putting every child to do that. Every child wants that. When they say, can I help? Can I help? They want a significant task, something that gives them worth and value. But in our culture, we say, no, you can't help. Go watch TV. Here, play Nintendo. Go back in your back bedroom, you know. And we keep on pushing away from that. It started even my little, youngest son, Caleb, when he was just small. I was laying underneath our old car. A deacon had given it to us. And, you know, when a deacon gives something to you, usually it's junk. But so he couldn't get nothing from the trade-in from it. So he brought it to my house. I felt led to give it to you. So this thing was leaking oil and stuff. So I'm laying underneath trying to fix his old car. And also my little son, he looks underneath the car, and he's only 5 years old. And he goes, hi, Daddy. And I said, hi, Caleb. He said, can I help? And what he wanted to do was help me fix the car. I said, yeah, I'll lay underneath the car with me. And I put a little grease on him, and I gave him a screwdriver, and he just banged around on the oil pan and made noise. But my wife walked by, and he said, look at me, Mom. I'm helping Dad. Yeah. So he felt a significance in his life because he thought he was helping me.
Well, that also gave him a sense of worth to not only himself but to the family.
Well, he told everybody at Sunday school next week, guess what? I helped Dad fix the car. You know, he was telling everybody he was a mechanic now, and he can overhaul Ford cars in, at 5 years of age. But that's what a significant task does. It gives you worth and value. You know, what happened when a man loses his job, his significant task? He no longer has worth. He loses self-esteem. He loses drive. You know, when a woman, when her children move out of the house and she no longer has children in the home, it's called the empty nest syndrome. It's a lady who lost her significant task. It's put into us by God, Jeremiah 6:16, that we have to have in our life a significant task.
Well, one thing I liked about your book as well is that you didn't portray yourself as the perfect parent necessarily, and you didn't expect perfection from the reader. You say, Mom and Dad, it's not your fault. Our culture has shifted. We've lost the tools to help kids grow up, and we no longer define what grown up means. And you go on to be encouraging the whole way. You know, a lot of parenting books, often you feel beat up after reading them. And after this, I felt built up, and I've talked to others and had the similar reaction. Was that intentional?
Yes, because if you came to my house, you find out I'm not a perfect dad. In fact, one day I told my son, I said, what am I going to do with you? He said, I don't know. You wrote the book. You tell me. And I was praying one day. I said, God, I've done the best I can. And I think every parent really think they do the best they can, and they do the best they can, except we had this shift in our culture that left us with no tools on how to fix this generation. And so I was praying to God. I said, God, I've done everything I can, and my children still turn out wrong, you know. And God says, I know. I had the same problem. I gave them a good garden to live in, and, you know, and they chose to do wrong. And also, God understood what it was to be a parent who has a child that went wayward. If you ask Mary and Joseph, you know, how's your child? He ran away. You know, for 3 days we went looking for him, and we looked day and night, and they said they finally found him in the temple. And so, I mean, we all have that feeling that we're doing our best, but there ought to be more we can do. And so what I want to say to parents is you're doing a fairly good job. If you just do one or two tweaking with it, you can even do a more incredible job with your children.
Well, I think you kind of help them through that in Chapter 9, maybe teaching children that there are logical consequences to the actions that they take. And there's an illustration in there in that chapter, I think, about one of your sons when he comes to you and tells you that he's done something wrong at school and he has to stay over the next day. Mm-hmm. And you might tell that story about what you told him.
Well, what happened, we had contracts with our children, and to help kids understand logical consequences, you have to contract with them. You know, if you don't come to dinner table on time, you don't get to eat till the next meal. And that's the logical consequences. And see, this generation does not experience logical consequences. It happened in change with the baby boomers and the parents that are today. We do everything we can to keep our children from experiencing logical consequences. We'll go to school and fight for our children instead of them really taking consequences for their own actions. And so what happened is that they went to a different school and had to pay for a bus to take them to school and back. And we paid $15 a month for that bus. Well, my son came home and said, Dad, I got a problem. I said, what's that? He said, I was sharpening my pencil, and I was flipping it in my hand, and all of a sudden, accidentally, it stuck in the ceiling. And as it was quivering in the ceiling, the teacher came in and looked up and saw the pencil there, and he got detention. He said, Dad, you have to come tomorrow and to pick me up after school because I have a detention. I said, no, I've already taken care of my responsibility. I already paid for the bus to bring you from the house, from the school back to home. He said, what am I going to do? I said, I don't know. It's your problem. You can go talk to the janitor. You know, I've seen every movie where that kid talks to that janitor, bring him home, or you can negotiate with the teacher. So he went to school that day. We're not knowing how he was going to get home. But before he left, I gave some options. I said, you can call a taxi cab, you know, or you can do this. And so 3 o'clock, he didn't show up. And my wife is pacing the floor. Where's our son at? Where's our son at? You know, 3:30 comes by, 4 o'clock. All of a sudden, this yellow taxi cab comes in. And I see him gets out and he has that little zipper wallet that he pulls out and he pays $5.10 to the cab driver. So he walks in. I say, how was school today? He goes, $5.10. So my second son got a detention. And he came home and said, Dad, I got a detention. I said, no problem here. You know, I don't care about detentions. You know, as long as you take responsibility for your actions and if you have to stay after school and pay for that detention, you stand like a man and do it. He said, Dad, can I talk to you? I said, what? He said, I want to negotiate with you. I said, what's that? He says, can I pay you $5.10 to come pick me up? I said, you got a deal. So he paid me the $5.10. I went and picked him up, brought him back home after his detention. So yeah,
that is so awesome. I wanted to quote what you said in chapter 9. You know, it says, parents, you cannot raise children without paying a price. Either you pay the price of laying down solid foundations and putting good building materials into their lives early on through logical consequences, or you spend the rest of your days trying to fix their lives. Would you prefer to be a contractor or a handyman on demand? That's pretty powerful stuff, isn't it?
Well, I'm experiencing right now with talking in doing these parenting conferences that so many grandparents are coming and where they have failed with their children and now they're raising their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And they are going, I failed the first time. What's make me be successful the second time? And they're producing the failures the second time. And so I understand this concept of either pay now, you pay later. Either pay the time to put in your kids the right tools and the right things, or the rest of your life, you're going to be trying to get a grip on your children.
And often you're trying to, it gets so bad that later on you're trying to start the tough love process. And boy,
that's tough.
Let me tell you, because I've been through that myself.
So I think it's you learn to pay the price now, and you put in your kids the rite of passage. See, every parent's job is to close down their childhood. Mm-hmm. I work all around the world in tribes. If I go to the Kermajong tribe, the child never expects to be a grown child. He expects to be his childhood closed down by the time he's 8 years old, and he takes on adult responsibility. You go to the Kermajong, the Wolof, the Mandinka tribe, every tribe in the world I have ever worked in has provided their children a rite of passage. And they said, today we're going to close down your childhood. We have no expectation to ever be in a child again. You're going to take on adult responsibility and adult consequences for your life. And they move into that mental expectation, and they begin to walk it out. And they cast into that thought, and then they call it out of them. Our culture does not do that. When do you become adult in America? That's what every kid asks me. When is it? Is it 16 when I start driving? No, you can't do that. You know, is it 18 when I can buy... Well, what can you do at 18? Get drafted.
Vote.
You can't even buy liquor.
Vote.
Yeah, vote, you know, but you can't buy liquor, you know. And at 21, I'm an adult, but you can't rent a car at the airport till you're 24, 25. And now your parents can take care of your insurance till you're 26. So when do you become adult in America? And the whole generation is confused because no one's closing down their childhood.
And your book gets to the root of all this, and your noble task, I would call it, is creating well-balanced adults, helping parents to help their children become well-adjusted adults, godly adults, and instead of overgrown children. We're talking to Walker Moore, the popular Messenger columnist, president of All Star Ministries. There's a book and a workbook,
mm-hmm.
and there are resources. You can check it out online. It's published by Thomas Nelson Publishers. What would be the best way for people to lay their hands on this book?
Well, they can call 1-800-ALLSTAR, AWESTAR, and we can ship it from our office, and that helps our ministry out when they buy it directly from us. Or they can go to Amazon.com, a Christian discount bookstore, any of those places online, or it's digitally download the trade book. The workbook is for parents to – it has contracts. Some parents said, I'd like to provide these things for my children, but I'm not creative to put down a contract or how to come up with good word, bad word, or clothing or that kind of stuff. How do I contract my children for value? And you have to contract for your children these days values to put in their lives. So the workbook has actual on-hand contract. It has a daily Bible reading while you go through it for 6 weeks. You have a daily quiet time. It'll help you as a parent to become strong in doing these things and to walk it out.
Well, Bob and I want to thank you for coming on the broadcast. The book is Rite of Passage Parenting. The author is Walker Moore, spelled like you'd think. There is one final note I just wanted to add. There's a story in there about you and your son Caleb and the journey, and I want to leave us on a cliffhanger with that to encourage people to buy the book. That story alone is worth the price of the book. Go get it, go read it, and it will change your outlook for the better. Walker, thank you again.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Messenger Insight, brought to you by the Cooperative Program and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma. For more, find us in the iTunes Store or visit us at BaptistMessenger.com.